else? Curious to know what your thoughts are as you sit there.
I just really enjoyed listening to the talk. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
And can't wait to read the book.
Good. Yes.
Mm. Well, I'm going to ask a question.
Yeah, Kilometre.
You know, I mean, obviously, as someone who's known you quite a while, I know that you've got a strong interest in literature and drama.
Yes.
And I suppose I wonder, just from what you said in the talk, to what extent what you learned in that field about approaching text.
Yes.
Has helped you to try and unravel the meaning behind some of those Buddhist texts. And also, I suppose the thought follows on from that in my mind. To what extent, because we used to, we used the word scripture at one point.
Yes.
And we're used, therefore, to the idea that these are religious texts.
Mm.
But I wonder to what extent, actually, you think they are literature.
Mm. Mm. Okay, so two questions. What did I learn from literature that informed how I approach these texts?
Yeah.
And to what extent are these texts literature?
Yeah.
Okay. What I learned from literature, I did an English degree, I used to direct plays and that sort of thing. What I learned, I would say, is that every literary text, reading a literary text properly, you need to enter it. You need to enter its world. Even, you know, a great poem, even if it's quite short, it's like entering someone's mind. It creates a way of seeing existence, creates its own terms for existence. And, you know, the language and the meanings and all of that go to make that up. And I think that's what one needs to do with the Buddhist texts, scriptures. You need to enter them, into them, and see the world through their eyes. And I think that, you know, there are different aspects of that, because it's partly history as well. One of the things I've been talking about in some of the other talks I've been giving other places, and these are all going to be a series which will be on the web. One of the things I've been talking about is entering a very different society, and actually making the Buddha more alien from us. You know, seeing him as someone from 2,500 years ago who is engaged with a completely different culture and a completely different worldview. If you do that, then the texts start to make sense and you can see how the Buddha is engaging with things that are real. So particularly things like the spirits, the spirit world, which I just touched on in that talk. If you imagine the Buddha is basically a modern person who is encountering all these people who believe in spirits, but he doesn't really, then you can't really make sense of how he responds. But if you see him as someone who's embedded in that world, for whom the spirits are real, in a culture where they're a more important reality than the political reality, or at least as important, then you can see how he's very skillfully navigating that world. He's given a role as a holy man, for example. And he has to figure out how to be skillful within that role. He can't choose his role in society. So there's maybe something analogous, that you enter into the world of the Buddha. And we often don't want to do that. We often want to draw lessons, universal lessons out for the modern world. Of course, in the end, we want to do that. But I think you miss a lot if you're not willing to see the otherness of the Buddha's teaching and the otherness of Asian culture in all the different forms of Buddhism. What's the second question? Yes, to what extent are they literary texts? Well, there are two aspects to that, because literary texts implies something that's crafted. And, you know, one of the biggest questions about all of these texts is, are we listening to the word of the Buddha, or are we listening to things that are the compositions of people in later centuries? I don't think there's a simple answer to that question. There clearly isn't a simple answer to that question. I think that it's useful to see how the longer texts are formed in literary ways. And you often see the meaning of something. Sometimes the significance of things in those texts isn't exactly stated, but it mirrors or echoes something that came before. And if you start to put them together in the way that you might if you're reading a novel, then you start to see what the meaning is. So it's not very clear without an example, but that's one sense. But the other sense is, I believe the Buddha was a great poet. Mm. And this is another aspect of looking at the Buddha's words, what I take to be the Buddha's words. There's this cascade of imagery, sometimes very powerful, like the image of lotuses. And sometimes, as in the first text that I read, which is the Atthadanda Sutta, you hear this voice, you know, a very strong, direct voice, talking across the centuries to you in very powerful imagery. And then other times you feel like you're reading something that's written by a committee. So that's quite a subjective take on where I think the Buddha's voice is heard and where it isn't heard. I have sometimes wondered if I have that perception, or I feel confident in that perception, because actually that's what a literary critic does. Whereas a textual scholar who's poring over the Pali grammar won't feel able to make that kind of judgment. So it's interesting to me that I've written a biography of the Buddha and all these scholars in their universities haven't. There actually aren't other books that you can read in the way that you can read this book and feel you've read a biography of the Buddha. And that's because they are constrained by their scholarship to not want to go beyond that which you can prove, really. It's not academically respectable to do that, and there are no doubt good reasons for that. But as someone coming from a more literary point of view, I don't feel that constraint. You know, I want to pay attention to the evidence, but I think essentially what I'm doing is an act of imagination. Imagination constrained by evidence is the phrase I came up with recently.
But I would say that's a good description for history.
Yes, because it's always an act of imagination. Yeah. Although, yes, people don't always like to acknowledge that.
But I think it is.
It is, yes, it is. It is. Imagination constrained by evidence.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that is a good way for thinking about how we can approach the Buddha. Mm-hmm. I was just having a bit of a dialogue with someone who read my book, who's a practitioner in a Kagyu tradition of Tibetan Buddhism, and saying that he really enjoyed my book, but he gets nowhere when he raises this sort of approach with his Kagyu teachers, because they've got a different way of approaching the Buddha. And if you want to be critical of that approach, not that I do particularly, but the difference is, what about the evidence? You know, we can't ignore it. We can't ignore the evidence of history.